I'm asking for all five of the RPAs.
Right. Yeah.
To agenda item 24, the Big Basin Water Company, NTMP.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, a reminder that we do have a supplemental sheet for this item, so if any of you folks who are here interested in this item have not received that, we do have copies available in the box back here. Ask staff for that. Thanks. And this is the a consideration of an individual waiver for waste discharge requirements for the Big Basin Water Company non-industrial timber management plan. And before we launch into this item, maybe I should mention where we are in terms of the development of the general waiver, which, as we've talked about many, many times, we think is probably a better way to go in terms of how we regulate discharges for timber operations. And we had hoped to have that available by the May meeting. However, it's not possible to do that because of our lead times and public review that's necessary. Our ability to respond to public comments once we receive them after the public comment period. So, unfortunately, we're looking at a deferral to the July board meeting for that item. And as the board indicated, that means that we need to consider individual waivers in the meantime, which is not the best way to go, not what we'd prefer, but we have to look at the realities of providing adequate lead time and public comment time for anything that we propose. So this one is, as I said, for the Big Basin Water Company's Non-Industrial Timber Management Plan, or NTMP, as it's called, and Howard Kolbov, our staff, will give the presentation.
Thank you, Roger. I need to make my first change to my presentation from good afternoon to good morning, which makes me happy. Good morning, Chairman Young, members of the board, Roger, Michael. I'm Howard Kolb. I'm staff with the regional board, and I'm working on the timber harvest program. This is Chris Adair. He's my senior on this project. Today, I would like to talk about two sets of requirements for timber harvest activities in the San Lorenzo watershed. And we are asking, our staff is asking for the following outcomes to today's meeting: adoption of those two waivers, one's the Big Basin NTMP, the other you'll hear later is the Wheaton NTHP. We have used the eligibility criteria, which we presented in February, and so it'll give the board an opportunity to provide a little feedback on the eligibility criteria and also on the proposed conditions that we've included in the waiver, because the resolution is very close to what you will see for the general conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements in July, and then the proposed monitoring program again. Before we get into the actual Big Basin, I'd just like to do a brief summary of where we've been. If you recall, we did in December a status of the timber harvest program, and at that time we talked about the 24 previously issued waivers, the framework, the timber tour, the timber workshop, several monitoring presentations regarding timber, the timber harvest program summary, and then most recently in February we talked about the proposed monitoring program and the eligibility criteria for staff to go through that effort. We also talked about, in those two meetings in December and February, where are we going and how do we get there. Again, staff is looking at improved program implementation to improve monitoring of the resources and increase our field presence, and doing all of that on a reduced budget and hopefully resulting in increased water quality protection. And then staff has proposed that the vehicle to get there would be the proposed timber requirements, which you'll hear in July of this year. And as Roger's already said, it's been moved back from May to July, so don't let that date catch you off guard. Again, we talked about the eligibility criteria and the monitoring in February. Staff created the eligibility criteria to help staff move through the process, determine the appropriate regulatory option, and the appropriate level of monitoring for a particular plan. To do that, the monitoring, we formulated some very clear questions, which were in the February presentation, and then we developed a monitoring program to answer those questions. As you recall, that is the eligibility criteria matrix that we presented in the meeting in February, and we use this as a decision tool. We wanted to make sure that this process is clear and transparent, and we hopefully that's what the eligibility criteria does. It will help us determine the appropriate regulatory option and the appropriate level of monitoring. With that as a backdrop, I'd like to talk about today's first item, which is the conditional waiver waste discharge requirements for the Big Basin and TMP. These are the timber harvest requirements which will be on this particular facility. The proposed project, it's an NTMP, which stands for Non-Industrial Timber Management Plan. Once you put together an NTMP, it goes on in perpetuity, and each time you plan to harvest, you have to notify CDF. They issue a permit to do the harvest, and each time they would come to us for a waiver of waste discharge requirements. The current harvest proposed is 109 acres out of a proposed 364 acres on the 450-acre parcel. Within the Big Basin area that's going to be harvested in or proposed for harvest, there's four Class 2 water bodies and six Class 3 water bodies, and that's in the Boulder Creek watershed. At the last meeting, there was, and I apologize, this table is so small to read, but there was some question on how do you define a Class 1, Class 2, or Class 3 water body. This table will be included in the presentation in July as an attachment, but I put it up here. This is page 65 of the Forest Practice Rules. It very clearly lays out what a Class 1 is, which is over on the left, and I forgot my brand new laser pointer. Over here, this is Class 1. If you have a domestic water supply and fish are always present, it classifies as a Class 1. A Class 2 is if fish are seasonally present or there's aquatic habitat that would support fish, and they go down accordingly in classification. And then down here, it talks about what kind of management practices you have to implement, and the Forest Practice Rules is very thick on the management practices that they must implement. This is staff went through the process of evaluating the Big Basin NTMP using the eligibility criteria. Let me say that since it's an individual set of waste discharge or waiver of waste discharge requirements, it's ending up in Tier 4. And that by virtue of it being an individual waiver, it's Tier 4. But if you went through the process, the cumulative effects ratio number, which is currently the acres proposed for harvest, the acres harvested in the last 10 years divided by the amount of in the current plan, and you can see they came up at 17% of the watershed has been harvested in the last 10 years. Staff, based on comments at the February meeting, has now added a new piece to the cumulative effects ratio. If you're in a watershed that is impaired for sediment or temperature and you are on the 303D list, the only option is for you to be in the high cumulative effects ratio grouping. So regardless of how much has been harvested in the past or how much you're proposing to harvest, you're put up into that high cumulative effects ratio. That finding is consistent with Forest Practice Rules. There is a rule, and I don't remember the number right off the top of my head, but it essentially says that the CDF cannot approve a plan if it will impact water quality and it's in a 303D listed watershed. So this is consistent with that rule in the Forest Practice.
And Howard?
Yes, sir.
Are you referring to the Santa Cruz rules or the statewide rules?
It's a state rule.
Right, but you know, there's like local rules.
Yeah, no, this is a state rule for 303D watersheds.
Okay. But the yellow-orange book that you've got in front of you,
This is the 2005 forest practice rules.
For the entire state?
Yes, for the entire state. The specific rules for the counties are sections begin in the 900s, 925, 926, 965, and those are, will all be cited in the initial study that you'll see for the proposed conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements in July. Roger? Yeah.
Just an itch.
Okay. Again, we did not change the drainage density, even though we've had some comments. I want to say that we sent a letter to all the workshop participants asking for comments. We've received back 7 or 8 letters at this point, totaling about, I'd say about 80 pages of comments just from those 7. So I will be trying to address those over the next several weeks while the item is out for public comment. And we plan to post those on our website here in the next week so that the public can have access to those comments as well. The soil disturbance factor. You can see that Big Basin, if they do not use winter ops, falls into the low category. If they go with winter ops, they move up into the medium category. Staff has also modified this, and we didn't use it in this particular plan, but we've actually added a erosion hazard rating factor into the soil disturbance, and that will also be presented in July. And I have an example of that if you'd like to see that. And you can see by if they were to go through the matrix and they were only to do the summer or the non-winter operations, they would end up in Tier 3 of the eligibility criteria. However, with the winter operations, they end up in Tier 4, and likewise, under the 303D list, it doesn't change them. If they're going to use winter ops, they'd remain in Tier 4. And again, these guys, this plan is in Tier 4 just by virtue of being an individual waiver. Here is an example of how it works. They had a high cumulative effects ratio. They had a high drainage density index. They have a medium level of soil disturbance factor. That puts them in Tier 4. The regulatory option is individual WDRs or an individual waiver of waste discharge requirements and an individual monitoring program, and that is what is before the board today. The proposed monitoring program actions.
Question here.
Yeah.
Maybe I forgot something, but why does it automatically become Tier 4?
Because we're considering individual waiver today. By virtue of it being a set of individual...
So all individual waivers are Tier 4?
Yes.
Okay.
Since we're broken for question, I have one too. As you say, Tier 4 is either individual WR or individual waiver.
Yes, sir.
And how do you distinguish between the two of those? So, for example, today we have a waiver. Why was that chosen versus a WDR? And when would you pick one versus the other?
Actually, we did. We had a case in the... Olive Springs Quarry, it's a 17-acre harvest. We elected to put that under an individual WDR because they're actually taking 17 acres that is in timber, eventually out of timber production. And we wanted to make sure that their operations were all captured in a more rigorous monitoring program. Mm-hmm. I don't have an exact... It's sort of a best professional judgment. That one came across my desk, and I go, no way can we issue a waiver for something that's going to take 17 acres out of timber and put it into another use. That just...
So it's a 17-acre clear cut then?
Eventually, yeah, it will be a 17-acre clear cut. But,
okay. In terms of the WDRs versus waivers, though, other than the requirement to submit an annual fee, is there any difference in the actual requirements of either the waiver versus the WDRs or a difference in the monitoring plans?
Yeah. With the Olive Springs Quarry, they have a much more rigorous monitoring program. They're required to collect all their stormwater runoff through a set of ponds. They monitor those ponds for turbidity and discharge to the environment. And I think they grab sample those whenever they're flowing on a daily basis.
Right, but that's because of the nature of the operations, not because it's a waiver versus WDR. So
no.
If we wanted to adopt a waiver that had that more stringent monitoring plan, we could do it. So I think another answer to your question is... There's really no difference except the fees.
Well, I understand that from many of our discussions. I was just asking him that it says is this or that. I was trying to get in which case does he go this way versus that way, or is there any rhyme or reason to it? And his thinking about it, just to understand
what's
being proposed.
Yeah, it's best professional judgment.
Okay, yeah, got that.
Just to take you back to February real quickly, we asked some specific questions at that time, and the intent is that the proposed monitoring program for Big Basin and TMP will answer those questions.
Excuse me, could you go back one slide? In my recollection, the last question, are timber harvest activities impacting, it's not just water temperatures, but water quality?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't list all the questions. Okay. There's a whole series of questions. These are just some examples. Okay. Just to, but that's good because you remember, and I appreciate that. See. Again, here's the three major types of monitoring that are included in all the waivers and all the timber harvest requirements. The old waivers, the timber harvest requirements, and the new proposed requirements.
Are you testing us, Howard?
No, I'm appreciative because okay. I can see that I'm getting my message across.
Good.
We're working on the same page.
All
right. Here is a specific monitoring proposed for the Big Basin NTMP for this portion of the cut. And remember, when they come back again, they will have different monitoring for different portions of the cut. They will be doing the effectiveness implementation. That's the visual monitoring. They will have two turbidity grab sample locations, one above a culvert that's going to be replaced with the bridge, and then below a check dam that's going to be removed. The sediment will be removed, and that dam will be removed. If these two sites were further apart, they would have had four turbidity locations, up downstream of the bridge and up downstream of the sediment check dam. I do have some pictures if you'd like to see. They're about 30 feet apart.
And by the way, I was pleased to see about the removal of the check dam.
Yeah, I think it's going to be real positive.
That was a good thing.
This is a check dam. This is a concrete structure. It has a little opening here. It drops about 8 feet down that other side.
Howard, it's a wood structure.
Isn't it concrete on top?
No. Oh,
there, see? It's all, oh, that's right. You told me about them. They had to haul the logs with a cable across.
It's all done by hand.
All done by hand. It's a wooden structure about 8 feet deep. It was originally put in at the request of Fish and Game because of some activities that preceded the current landowner's actions or management. It has now filled in. It's viewed as a potential barrier to fish passage. And the, correct me if I'm wrong, Jim, but the sediment source is mitigated or has abated. There is rock or boulder or gabion down at the bottom of this structure, so when the material is removed, they're going to go down to the to that hard structure.
Is that going to take some excavating to get to, yeah, right?
Yeah. And I'm actually standing on the edge of the timber road. It's very conveniently located. The haul road goes right past this facility, and there's just a little, 15 feet, and they'll be able to do it with a backhoe from the bank. This is looking upstream from that check dam, and just beyond these trees is this culvert. And this culvert, the road curves past this and goes across, and they're planning to take this culvert out and replace it with a bridge to help facilitate fish passage. So these are all positive things going on. We talked about there's going to be two photo monitoring points, again, at the culvert and at the check dam. And then there are two temperature locations. The two temperature locations are going to be on Jameson Creek. Jameson Creek is out here. It's not within the plan cut area, but it's directly adjacent to the cut area. And there's four Class 1 four Class 2 water bodies on the project that drain into Jameson Creek. And we thought it was appropriate after discussion with the property owner and the forester to measure temperature in that class one to capture the effects from all four of those. In addition to that, the property owner collects temperature samples from a number of these drainages because he diverts water for his water company. So he's testing those water temperatures as they come into his facility. So we have sort of upstream, downstream numbers. There are a few editorial changes that, and I've sent a supplemental sheet, and these are typos. There was a parenthetical question contained at the end of a sentence, and the word spell, because somebody wanted me to spell out water quality management areas, and I swore I deleted that, but I don't know how it stayed in there.
While you're doing those, you also need to do 10C. It has some parenthetical stuff in it as well.
10C?
Yes. At the end of the sentence, there's spell designations, which I don't imagine you really want to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks.
You're welcome.
And then on the subsequent, in the monitoring and reporting program, page 5, I had meant to change WILPES to WaterCourse and WaterCourse to WILPES so that the sentence read appropriately. That's page 5, second paragraph of item D1 in the monitoring and reporting program. And then under monitoring frequency, I wanted to be more specific and say May 1 through October 15th.
By the way, that's preceded by month of, so I think you need to take the month of out of it when you make that change, because it's no longer month of May 1 through October 15th. It's just that range.
And then I want to make sure the map that you have in your particular item does not include the check dam, and a new map is going to be added, the one I just showed you earlier, that will show that check dam location. The only other thing is there at the end of the staff report, there's three random pages of the eligibility criteria, and I don't know how those got there, so I apologize for that, but they don't need to go out with the order. They're not relevant to this order.
Okay. We have... 5 speakers. Why don't we proceed and hear from them? Thank you, Howard. Jim Moore, followed by Steve Otten, and then Bob Erlage, Nadia Hamey, and Thomas Sutphin.
Good morning. I'm Jim Moore. I'm the manager of Big Basin Water Company, and I've operated Big Basin for over 20 years, and during that time I've observed the watershed on a continual basis, and I've collected water quality and rainfall data to substantiate some of the things that have gone on here. The monitoring program, which the regional board staff has prepared, is acceptable as long as I get a waste discharge waiver. I have worked with Big Creek Lumber for over 3 years on an NTMP, and we've got the NTMP on January 14th. The waste discharge waiver will allow us to go forward with logging, so that's the combination of those things are necessary. But based on my observation and water company data, I believe the monitoring program could be improved. Over the past 10 years, there's been 115 days of 2-plus inches of rain. 90 of those have been grouped into consecutive or near-consecutive periods. What I do believe is that the visual monitoring could possibly end up, the three days of visual monitoring could all end up being in the same three consecutive days at the beginning of the year. And I think that it might be better to be looking at storm events rather than simply 2-plus days. The other thing is a safety condition might occur because the roads, the skid trails get slash packed, so they no longer are really accessible. They'll need to be walked, and it would, if you're out the second and a 2-inch day after a 2-inch day, you're going to be walking through some fairly hard walking areas and a bad rainstorm trying to collect data, doing visual monitoring. I think possibly a designation of critical monitoring points, and Howard and I have spoken about it, and we've actually looked at it and looked at the data that I have from the watershed and the idea of actually pointing out better places to look at rather than just look at everything makes a little bit more sense. Also, I take turbidity constantly. I'm required to report the turbidity, the raw water turbidity, daily to the state health. So I have turbidity readings going back for years on all of these water courses. What I do, because I have a reservoir, is when there is a storm event, I stop taking water. I close all of my intakes and only take it from my reservoir during storm events. But in general, except during the El Nino year and major storm events, all of these streams, these water courses, come back to less than 2 NTUs within 24 hours. And at that point, I refill my reservoir. So I've got long-term data on actually how these streams operate. I won't say that, this is always the case. There's the problem with large storm events. But in most cases, in general years, they come back real quick because of the geology. I also walk the property every day. I live on the property. My wife and I walk 2 or 3 miles in the morning and look at it daily year-round. And I observe things, animal activity, trespass, that sort of stuff, year-round. I actually go out in a quad and travel areas that I can't get to easily. And I've been doing that for 20 years. I've been observing the property, and I definitely look at it much more than 3 times a year after a timber harvest. So I hope that, we can get the waiver through. But my observation and actually the criteria that I need to meet because of my state health standards are a lot more stringent than what are being called for here in the monitoring plan. Any questions?
Well, do you have some specific recommendations for the monitoring plan, or are you just saying it's
well,
not?
I think that Howard and I spoke about this, a couple of months ago, and we spoke about that, and I was going to we haven't had time to sit down with the data that I have. I really don't think that we're talking about making the monitoring plan less in any way. I think we're trying to improve it so that we deal with safety issues and also consider maybe monitoring storm events rather than 2+ days so you get your monitoring spread out. I think both from the idea of trying to go out there and monitor 3 days in a row, I don't believe the information that you're going to get is going to be the best information. And at the same time, I don't think it's the safest thing. We've discussed it, and I'd be willing to put together some more of the data that I have and information and give it to Howard so that we came up with a more specific to Big Basin Water monitoring plan, which hopefully would help.
And this could be done later anyway, correct?
Absolutely.
The executive officer can make changes.
Well, and one of, as Jim and I began to talk, I began to learn more about the water company side of it, and we talked, and I actually asked him, would you do these sets of analysis? And he's been at it now, 3 weeks, kind of pulling the information together and doing that. So some of the stuff's brand new to me, yesterday, and we would like to incorporate that. It's a tremendous opportunity. And that was exactly what I suggested, is that he put together a proposal. Once the order is in place, send it to us, and under the approval of the executive officer, we could modify the monitoring report.
Good. Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Dr. Press.
How much logging has happened on Big Basin Water Company land thus far?
For how long?
Let's say the last 20 years or so.
Before, I think in the late 70s, there was a logging project. I was not there and involved. Since the last 20 years, there's been one in the early 90s, and there was one in the late 90s. Different areas, though. There's actually not, they had said 450 acres, it's actually 900 acres.
Uh-huh.
364 are being timbered. They're, with the NTMP, we're proposing a very small cut in different areas so that it becomes sustainable, and we broke the property up into five different units so that they could be entered according to actual growth and other conditions. What has been in the past, I would say probably over the last 15 years, all of the area that's in this proposal has been logged at least once.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Why we use the money. The money goes, first it goes to direct improvements to the watershed. Second it goes to improvements to the water company. It's paid for water tanks. It's paid for monitoring equipment. It's paid for trespass fences, retaining walls where necessary. It goes back into the water company. Actually, the CPUC is requiring that from this point on, 30% goes back into my rate base, so that it decreases the rates to the customers before I use the remainder. I mean, obviously there's taxes, that sort of thing first, but then it gets put back into actual facility improvements for the water company. Since we only have 600 customers, it's fairly difficult to keep up with the standards required today without having additional revenues. And that's what it's used for.
Okay, so you couldn't do the management activities you just mentioned out of your current fee structure?
No.
You'd have to increase the rate base.
Yeah.
You talked about watershed improvements being another justification for this. And of course, I'm not picking on you. You're a water company.
Correct.
You're in the business of producing and providing clean water. So you more than most have an especially tight connection between your watershed and your water quantity and quality. So I'm always makes me curious to know why a water company would log its source of water. But talking about watershed improvement activities.
Well, it's things like what we're saying, of removing of a check dam, making sure that the skid trails or the logging roads are properly cared for, allowing for more time spent out there.
Uh-huh.
So that you know, especially observation, long before any of this monitoring, I spend the time for the last 20 years, whenever there's a rainstorm, I'm out there. I walked it for years by myself. I have one son that works for me now between the two of us, because the only time you really can deal with the problems that exist is during the rainstorms.
Right.
And you need to spend time out there in rain gear with a shovel and making sure that any potential problem is avoided before it becomes a problem.
Right.
But at the same time, over those 20 years, state requirements for my operation of the water company continue to increase. The costs increased in testing, etc.
Yeah.
A lot more of my time ends up in other things, and so I need to have more resources so that some of the time can be spent by other people than myself.
Right, and you probably wouldn't get that check dam removed and the culvert replaced without a logging activity to pay for it.
Most likely.
Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
In your the 20 years that you've been connected to this land, have you seen any change in the status or health of the fish populations?
Well, there really is no fish populations on our property at all.
Okay.
All of these, even these Class 2 water courses would be most of the area doesn't even, most of the creeks don't run year-round down to the main water body. They dry up during the summer. It's all terrestrial areas, but Actually, in the whole time, even this check dam never had any sediment in it except during the El Nino storms. And Howard and I walked it with Nadia and found a slide outside of the area along the creek that actually ended up being the source of this problem. The areas upstream from there, which were the reason it went in, have both been mitigated, and the silt fencing has no sediments in it. Although those are the areas that I knew to watch, at this point I know another area to take a look at, both physically walking to and from a forensic monitoring standpoint. But for the most part, I think it looks better. As long as the timber harvest is selective and is not done, we're in there trying to make sure that we follow the forest practice rules and protect the condition of the forest. And Big Creek has been real good at being very concerned with, doing the best environmental job possible. And I actually see a nicer forest than we have in the past.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Chairman Young?
Sure.
I was out on another area that they logged in 97, 98 for a pre-harvest inspection. And then when we did this NTMP, because that same area is going to be included to be logged sometime in, I think, 2014, we did a post-harvest, and it looked really good. Water bars were in place, not a lot moving off the roads. If anything was moving off the roads, it was captured in the slash pack and buffers right up against the roads. The worst thing was a house pad at the bottom of one of these, and I did call Santa Cruz County Code Enforcement, and they were supposed to follow up.
Okay. Thank you. Steve Auten. Okay. Mr. Burlage.
I'll pass other than to apologize for my cell phone going off. It's the first time that's happened to me. I'm always irritated when it's somebody else's. I was appalled that it was mine. That's last.
Well, we allow it to happen once. The second time, we confiscate it. Just kidding. Okay. All right, let's see. Nadia, Amy?
Hello, Chairman Young, members of the board. My name is Nadia Hamey. I am the registered professional forester for the Big Basin Water Company, NTMP. And I have a few comments about the individual waiver before you today. I want to give you a little bit of background. The Big Basin Water NTMP was initially submitted to CDF on March 15th of 2004. The plan underwent a multi-agency review in the field that spanned a total of 4 days. The following agencies attended: the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, the Department of Fish and Game, Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, the California Geological Survey, the County of Santa Cruz, and the City of Santa Cruz. A public meeting was held in April of 2004 to discuss the project with the various neighbors that are near the project area, and a second public hearing was held as part of the CDF review process. The plan was approved on January 14th of this year. We initially submitted an application for an individual waiver in March of 2004 so that the project could be heard at the July 2004 meeting. However, the plan was not approved until January of this year, as I mentioned. So we resubmitted our application and requested that it be heard at the February meeting. Our request was not granted, and we were moved to today, which is where we find ourselves. The landowner has expended an enormous amount of time and money on this project, and we would like to move forward today with an individual waiver. While we urge you to approve the waiver today, we continue to have serious concerns regarding the scope, necessity, and efficacy of the proposed monitoring requirements, particularly since your board instructed staff to use this individual waiver as a test for the eligibility criteria and monitoring and reporting program. Our concerns are substantiated by the comments submitted by Dennis Hall and Pete Cafferata of CDF, which bring into serious question the methods establishing the eligibility criteria of the monitoring and reporting program. I hope you've had a look at that. We are urging you to approve this waiver, but nevertheless, there should be serious evaluation of the evidence submitted by CDF and others, including the temperature data sent to you by Big Creek Lumber earlier this month. The test waiver before us has huge implications for all forest landowners in this region and must be evaluated thoroughly. Many of these forest landowners have forest lands that act as the only buffer between the stream systems that this board intends to protect and the resulting general waiver should be reasonably applied based on the scale that selective management occurs in the Santa Cruz Mountains, along with all other uses in the watershed. Furthermore, it should not bound forest landowners economically and not require the gathering of data with questionable value. Those are my comments for the individual waiver, and I would like to entertain any questions.
Any questions from the board? Okay, thank you very much.
Excuse me, I had one. Who are those letters by again?
The letters. Well, there's a couple of letters. One is from Dr. Robert Ziemer, who's a forest hydrologist on the North Coast, evaluating the general waiver. Uh-huh. And the other is co-signed by Dennis Hall and Pete Caffarata of the Department of Forestry.
Okay, thanks.
Welcome.
Chairman Young,
yes.
Those were the letters of comment that I mentioned earlier that we've received from the workshop participants.
Staff will probably be responding to those then when we deal with the general waiver when it comes up. Okay, Thomas Sethman.
Good morning. I'm Tom Sethman with CDF, and my reason for coming this morning was to hear your process this morning, get an update on where you are, and just to emphasize that CDF is available to work with your staff on developing this matrix process. Just to there was discussion about the letter from Pete Caffaretta, CDF forest hydrologist. CDF staff is available to work with your staff on this process. I know it's very complicated, lots of different issues, but there is a lot of research out there, existing research that you can draw on to help with your matrix process and monitoring requirements. And I think as well as CDF staffs being available, you've heard at the last meeting how the California Geological Survey staff was also available and can make use of their expertise as well. So just encourage you to take advantage of those opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Sethman, is your office going to be submitting any comments, or is Mr. Caffaretta the one who's the point person for this?
Caffaretta is the person there.
Okay.
He's really much more knowledgeable and really has a good handle on the existing research on just a broad array of relevant topics. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't have any more speaker cards. Mr. Daniels?
I have some questions of staff.
Go ahead.
Okay. The NTMP process, as I understand, as you mentioned, it is granted once and then is good forever. What happens when forest practice rules change during the infinite lifetime of that NTMP? Like, for example, I think in the mid-90s there were some Santa Cruz rules that got put in place. And what if you had one dating from early 90?
I don't know the answer to that question. However, our waiver would still not allow impacts to water quality or beneficial uses.
Okay.
And when they re-enter, they're required to submit to CDF a plan for re-entry. And maybe Tom Sutphin can address that, but I would think they would have to submit a plan that was consistent with the current rules.
I'm Tom Sethman. It's my understanding that the new rules are taken into account and that it is a flexible document in that regard.
Okay, thank you. Okay. On page 2, you mentioned soil erosivity and is moderate to high. And where does that come from? Where did that conclusion come from?
That's straight out of the THP, out of the timber harvest plan that's provided to the regional board from the forester and reviewed by CDF.
Okay. By the way, I'd just like to compliment you on this. I mean, this is the first THP I've seen that I'm comfortable with, both in terms of its results and its approach. And so I thank you for it. I think it's really good stuff.
Thank you.
Particularly, I think the notion of combining the sites on Jameson Creek, they're doing the one thing as opposed to all over the place. I think that was a very good practical solution to things that is protective and yet doesn't mean lots of work has to be done. And Dr. Press mentioned, combining those two sites that were close to each other, I think that was a good thing as well. So those are good.
Staff hopes that we can get out on more PHIs, because what we'd like to do once the general requirements are in place is identify those sites during the pre-harvest inspection.
Okay. I have a couple of things I'd like to talk about. I think, as we've always been beaten into our heads, you have to have findings that show you've looked at things appropriately. And I don't see much in the way of findings about this site in the actual waiver. The item 5 on page 2 mentions the site number, and item 7 mentions the beneficial uses, but, for example, there's no discussion about it being 303 delisted. There's no discussion about this erosivity factor or any other cumulative effects factor. So I think it's going to be important when we do these to have enough findings in there so that if they ever were challenged, that we would have enough reason for why we're doing all this. Because if I were a judge looking at just this thing, I wouldn't see any reason for why we're doing anything at all, because there's no description of the property or why it's of less concern or more concern or any of those things. So I think we really need to look at adding those kinds of findings.
But you can get at that, it seems to me, by referencing the eligibility criteria that have a lot of data. In other words, there are data in the THP that are being exported to the eligibility criteria, and I would fold that in to or make those findings. So in other words, you don't have to do double work. You've done the work of extracting the data from the THP along with your own pre-harvest inspection, and you've used those data to produce the eligibility.
Certainly you can reference things. I don't disagree
right.
with that.
No, I'm just saying that's how I would do it, because then you'd have findings to look at.
But this currently has no rationale for why we're doing anything. I think
I've tried to put that in the actual resolution. Finding 9 and finding 13 in the actual resolution talk about the plan process, because what I was looking down the road, and when we do general timber requirements, I don't, we'll have the information in-house, but you'll see here's the order, comply with the order, and here's the monitoring requirements. And I'm thinking more generic when I was doing this, trying to move towards that direction. But
so you're looking at a model for a general permit then?
Absolutely.
Even though this is a specific permit?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, okay, so maybe this applies then to specific permits, but I think specific permits should have enough findings so that it captures the rationale for things.
Right, and the type of findings would be different in the general waiver and specific waivers. But I agree, when we do individual waivers in the future, they should have more site-specific findings. And clearly in this case, the information is in the record, and the board's discussion has indicated that it was considered, but it would be better to have it in the
permit.
In the written findings.
Yeah, right. And second of all, I had some problem with the MRP. There are whole big sections of the MRP, like, for example, here under B, it mentions examples of implementation monitoring include blah, 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 blah. And the first thing I did when I read this is I thought, well, okay, are we asking them to do any of these or none of these? And for me, an MRP should really just have do this, do this, do this, and report this and report this. And here we're having kind of discussion, and it's unclear if these are requirements or not requirements. And so I think it's cleaner to not have this in the MRP, because I think I got a little confused as to what you're actually asking them to do and not asking them to do from these sorts of things.
What are you referring to, Mr. Daniels?
Okay, in item B, it starts off the second after that first little sentence. It says, implementation monitoring is used to determine whether activities are carried out as planned. Implementation monitoring may be applied at a range of spatial scales focusing on specific rules for rule sets for multiple years. Examples of implementation monitoring include, and there are a bunch of bullet items, determine whether the discharge is properly applying and maintain applicable forest practice rules. Next bullet item, determine whether, inform, implement. And so I thought when I first saw these, we were asking them to do them, but with closer examination, it looks like maybe we're not. Maybe we're just kind of listing these interesting things that we found. And for me, an MRP is best done, you know, kind of action-oriented.
Yeah, this is true of C and D as well.
Yes, it's repeated, throughout quality. The MRP.
And those are actually good things to have in our program. They are good descriptions to have in the kind of background materials that we have in the eligibility criteria. Those are the sorts of things, great language to keep for the July discussion. But I agree with Bruce that it's not really...
For me, the MRP should be crystal clear about what we're asking them to do. And for me, this kind of muddies the water. In fact, even in here, I find, you know, things, language like may, or it talks in here somewhere about, you know, things are determined at the pre-inspection. Well, for this case, I think we've already done the pre-inspection, so we should already have either determined it or not determined it. And so all this kind of conditional language is very fuzzy for me as to, you know, what's being required.
Yeah, and I won't argue that. The actual monitoring they're supposed to do is documented under items 1 and 2, and then if you look at the bottom of page 3, it lists out the specific actions and photo sets. So the monitoring program could actually be greatly reduced, but I was trying to be inclusive.
Well, even under number 1 there, 1B, photo point monitoring, photo point monitoring shall be at the locations where the timber harvest activities have greatest risk of potential discharge. Sites may be established during, again, this conditional language. It's not saying monitor here, here, and here. It's just talking about kind of general principles. And
yeah, that's only at the very end of that. Under the specific actions, I say you will monitor here.
Okay.
But you're right. It is general.
Would this MRP make more sense if we just take out the examples?
I believe so. But, again, I was thinking May, now July. I was thinking big picture, keeping everything on the table.
But for what we're doing today?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So I would propose that we do that. We redraft this so that it's clear what we're asking.
Mr. Press.
I wonder if for the eligibility criteria, if you might want to capture in the score, in the overall scoring, the kinds of things that the landowner and the foresters are doing, the check dam, the culvert replacement. We've been talking throughout on this issue about how landowners and foresters can improve the properties. I think that they should that we might consider crediting those improvements in the eligibility. I mean, I really like to see that. I like to see these kinds of things. They improve land management. Can we capture that in the eligibility? If there's a whole lot of improvements happening as a result or along with a timber harvest plan, it'd be nice to capture that in the scoring. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So if what you have in here, you have a category called silviculture. The only item in the silviculture category is area in the THP, but you could have practices. You could have, they're not really silvicultural, they may be, maybe you call them land management practices or maintenance practices or you call them improvements. And you basically are sending the signal. Essentially, this eligibility criteria matrix is a way of taking a lot of different activities and reducing them to to numbers that then sum up, right? So roads, if you have a lot of roads, that's a big factor. We talked at the February meeting about how you design some of these weights and scores to encourage certain practices, right? So that your scores come down or that you end up in a different tier. If we could take improvement and make that a scoring factor. We've done this informally today, really, by just hearing good things about the plan, but it could be worked into the eligibility criteria, and then somebody coming before the board would know that if they took some discretionary decisions, those would help with their score.
I have a comment to that, because the eligibility criteria really goes to what sort of monitoring we require, and these are all risk factors for the impacts of harvesting. So if removing a check dam or fixing a road crossing would mean there's going to be less erosion or less water quality impacts, then it's appropriate to require less monitoring, but to just give a credit because...
No, it has to be because there's reducing the risk factors, absolutely, and that's clearly what's happening here.
So no credit for giving money to the tsunami victims then, for example.
Right. Well, you could imagine other improvements that would not reduce risk factors. So those have to be in there.
I did have one I guess, request. I spent some time studying these charts that you had put in here that weren't supposed to be in there since they're both the same. But I would like to actually see the charts for these two cases just to understand your scoring system.
Would you like to see them now?
If you've got them, yeah.
Yes, I do. They're. Yeah, I'm going to have to use the overhead here.
Oh. Well, actually, I'd just like to have copies because I like to study them.
I do have copies, and I can make copies for other board members if anyone else is interested.
How about if you want to submit that to the board, we can review it?
Yes, that'd be great. Okay. You can even email it to me. That'd be fine.
Okay. All right. Any other board questions or comments? All right. Mr. Briggs, are we ready to have staff just go over the changes to their recommendation?
I believe we are ready.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so we'll go with Howard's recommendation with the... his recommended changes at the end of the presentation. There was also the removal of a parenthetical remark at 10C that Mr. Daniels mentioned. Remove the excess pages at the end of the at the item. Change the language with respect to the month when we take out those months, right? Take out the rhetoric in the monitoring reporting program. Was there anything else?
Well, by rhetoric, you're referring to the items that are examples and discussion, as opposed to what we'll do is we'll trim it down to the actual shall perform such and so monitoring.
In the monitoring report.
Did we want to add any findings to the actual waiver?
I thought the suggestion there was to, as our Council said we have adequate evidence in the record here in terms of discussion, and that was more for future consideration of individual waivers and requirements.
I'll move the staff report.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously. Thank you. I think what we'll do is we will continue right into the next agenda item, since it should be shorter, and then we can be done with the THPs prior to lunch, and then folks that have